The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. A man named John was sent from God. He came for testimony, to testify to the light, so that all might believe through him. He was not the light. He came to testify to the light. And this is the testimony of John. When the Jews from Jerusalem sent priests and Levites to him to ask him, "Who are you?" He admitted, and he did not deny, "I am not the Christ." And so they asked him, "What are you then? Are you Elijah?" And he replied, "I am not." "Are you a prophet?" He answered, "No." And so they said to him, "Who are you, so that we can give an answer to those who sent us? What do you have to say for yourself?" And he replied, "I am the voice of one crying in the desert, 'Make straight the way of the Lord,' as Isaiah the prophet had said." But some Pharisees were also sent, and they asked him, "Why then do you baptize, if you are not the Christ or Elijah or a prophet?" To them he answered, "I baptize with water, but there is one whom you do not recognize, the one who is coming after me, whose sandal strap I am not worthy to untie." And this happened in Bethany across the Jordan, where John was baptizing. The Gospel of the Lord. The more often I read these Gospels, they speak to me in various ways. I have read this gospel text countless times over the years, and yet, when I come to read it and reflect on it for today, it speaks to me in a new and in a different way. Somehow, I have changed, and the Word has become more alive, and the Word has a new teaching and a new understanding for me. So let me reflect with you on the teaching of this gospel and what it meant to me, and perhaps what it might mean for you. It has to do with those people who go out into the desert. They're seekers, they're searching, they have questions. Every one of us at some time, figuratively or literally, go into the desert with questions, wondering, searching, seeking. Well, maybe not everyone. There are some very perfect people who have answers to everything and have already overcome the restrictions of original sin. People like that don't go into the desert as seekers, carrying questions and wondering about the kingdom of God. But for most of us, at some time, we feel something deep inside of us that calls us to go into a desert experience and seek answers which our normal life and the world just cannot answer. And this gospel speaks to each and every one of us who at some time wished to go to the desert, or indeed did go into a desert experience, seeking some deeper understanding of life. So let me reflect on this for a few moments. Many of you have been to Florence, and you've gone to the Accademia to see the great piece of art, David. And when you enter the academy and you go toward David, you see this majestic regal nakedness of David, the perfect human being, 17 feet tall, looking down on the imperfect humanity, all those who have come to see the perfection of David. I've been there a number of times, and it's remarkable, this incredible piece of art. And yet, when I look at it, I'd say, it's not me. It speaks to me about something extraordinary, but it doesn't speak to me about myself. But if I pull back in the aula, just maybe about 50, 60 paces, there are four images there, sculptures done by Michelangelo, called the Four Prisoners, or the Four Slaves. These are four blocks of marble with images which are unfinished, either by accident or by design, they're unfinished. I reflected on them many times. The first one is the awakening slave, or the awakening prisoner. This is the image of a man contorted, struggling to overcome some restrictions of his humanity, the burdens of original sin, struggling and yet incomplete. It's called the awakening. It speaks to us about that time in our lives when we are becoming more aware. New realities touch us. A different world confronts us. And we are awakening to new challenges and new burdens and new possibilities, new promises in life. I can relate to the awakening slave. The second one to look at is called the bearded slave. And he represents to me the one who is wearing a mask. And here is a bearded person, a bearded man, trying to find some fulfillment and unfinished. He's masked. And with the mask, he hasn't really completed his awareness of his humanity. The third one is called the young slave, or the young prisoner. And this one represents the unfinished life of a young person, struggling with new awarenesses of life, new experiences of life, hoping, dreaming, having visions, struggling with temptation, struggling with diversions, with all of the burdens and difficulties of life that a young person, the confusion of life, represented by the young slave, struggling to free himself from all of the burdens, conflicts, which are part of his life. The fourth one is called Atlas, the image of a man carrying a very heavy burden, weighed down. And it's named Atlas after the primordial Titan that we see in mythology, where this man is carrying the world on his shoulders. The Atlas slave represents each and every one of us when we seem to be burdened down with the cares of the world. What is it that weighs us down and assures us that life is incomplete? I'm struggling to get beyond some impediment, to overcome some obstacle in my life. I am the Atlas person, weighed down with the weight of the world. Now, I didn't see myself in David, but somewhere I saw myself in the slaves, the incomplete, unfinished sculptor of the prisoners, called prisoners or sometimes called slaves. I am trying to break loose from something. Is it some addiction? Is it some failure in my life? Is it some discouragement? Whatever it is, it seems like my life is not complete and I'm trying to break loose. And when that happens to me, I am tempted to go to the desert to find an answer, to find freedom, to find some fulfillment, some wholeness in my life. Where I find myself in life, it somehow is part of the restriction, it's part of the burden, it's part of the weight of life. I'm looking for a new awareness, and I am tempted to go to the desert. You know, in the world of art, as in the spiritual life, there are two very important values. One is you have to have time, but the second is very important because the world tells us seeing is believing. That's what the world says. Seeing is believing. If you don't see it, you don't believe. But in the world of the Spirit, and in the world of art, it's not seeing is believing. It's believing is seeing. You will only see if you believe. Think about that. Let me give you an example of how this became very clear to me. Some years ago, I was told well in advance that Van Gogh's Potato Eaters, his famous, famous, incredible piece of art, was coming to the Getty. And I thought, I'd like to go to see that. So I saw some images of it. Didn't impress me. But I know there's something there. I believe that there's a teaching in that masterpiece that I have to search, I have to find. I believe that. And perhaps if I believe enough, I'll see it. So I went to the Getty and spent some time looking at the Potato Eaters. Five people sitting around a table in obviously a very poor house, a very small area. They're eating potatoes. And I looked at them, and the teaching of Van Gogh, they're honest, decent, hardworking people. They're people that work the land. They have endured the hardships of the winter. But they're honorable. There's something Van Gogh wanted to say, that they're very honorable people. They're eating the food which they themselves have cultivated. They're poor people. And I looked at this and I said, there's something here that I am missing, but I believe it's there. And I looked and I reflected and I said, I see. These are my grandparents. That painting was done in 1885, just 5 years before Van Gogh died. He was just 37 when he died. 1885, post-famine Ireland. My grandparents lived in that era when that painting was done. They were poor people. They lived in a little house. They cultivated a land which was very impoverished. They were honorable, decent, truthful people. They were people with a profound sense of God in their lives, in all of their rigorous life. And looking at the painting, the faces are not quite clear. Van Gogh meant us to see whomever we wish to see in the faces. I saw it because I believed. And I saw my grandparents. There's something extraordinary, wonderful, honorable, decent, rich about this kind of poverty. Something that totally escapes our world. I saw it because I believed. Dostoevsky, in his extraordinary novel, The Idiot, has Prince Mishkin say this: the world will be saved by beauty. Now, the prince, that was important because he was an epileptic and he didn't fit the exalted, presumptuous mind of the court that belonged to all the other person in the Russian court. He was compassionate. He was down to earth. He was kind. He could see things the others couldn't see. They thought he was limited because of his epilepsy. But he had a vision the others did not have. Dorothy Day picked this up, and in her marvelous, touching biography, The Long Loneliness, she says this: the world will be saved by beauty, but the beauty she saw was the kindness to generosity. In radical poverty, she saw beauty. She saw the face of God and the poor. She saw beauty in those who came to care for them. She had enough faith to believe, and believing, she could see. That's the teaching about this gospel. Not all of those who came to John the Baptist saw, only those who believed. They believed to the Messiah, and they saw the Messiah. All the others who were not believing people were saying, we have to see before we believe. They went back unenlightened, destined for the poverty of their world and their life from which they came, with unanswered questions, seeking what they did not find. But those who believed, they saw the Messiah. They saw the meaning of life. And now they could put into context suffering, struggle, miracles, healing, sacrifice. Wow. They believed and they saw. They saw a Messiah that came among us to be like us, to struggle, to go through rejection, to go through pain and suffering, to do it for others, to make sacrifices, to lay down his life for others. They saw because they believed. And this gospel speaks to us about believing. If you believe, you will see. In the 11th chapter of the Gospel of John, we have the seven, what we call the signs in the Gospel of John. There are seven. The seventh and the greatest sign in chapter 11 It's the greatest miracle in all the public life of Christ, the raising of Lazarus from the dead. Jesus raised others from the dead, but Lazarus is different. He was dead for 4 days, which means he was very dead. He was gone. And Jesus comes to the tomb, and he says to Martha, "Roll back the stone." But Martha will hesitate and say, "But Lord, after 4 days, there will be a stench. I shouldn't do that." And he says to Martha, "Did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? If you don't believe, you will hesitate." Now, we live in a peculiar time with the virus restricting everybody. Is it possible that believing we could see beauty, sacrifice, a generosity which we have not seen before? Perhaps if we believe, we could see miracles. Perhaps if we believed enough, we would take responsibility and be led by the power of the Holy Spirit in generosity and caring and in respect. This gospel says to us, believe and you will see. The world will be saved by beauty.